Memoirs of the Reverend Robert Murray Machini, picking up on page 18, March 6th. Wild wind and rain all day long. Hebrew class, Psalms. New beauty in the original every time I read. Dr. Welch, lecture on Pini's letter about the Christians in Bithynia. Professor Jameson on quartz. Dr. Chambers grappling with Hume's arguments. Evening, notes and little else. Mind and body dull. This is a specimen of his register of daily study. March 20th, after a few sentences in Latin, concluding with in M-E-A-M, and then A-N-I-M-A-M, Venia, Donami Duas Omnipotens. He writes, leaning on a staff of my own devising, it betrayed me and broke under me. It was not thy staff, resolving to be a god. Thou showest me that I was but a man. But my own staff being broken, why may I not lay hold of thine? Read part of the life of Jonathan Edwards. How feeble does my spark of Christianity appear beside such a sun? But even his was a borrowed light, and the same source is still open to enlighten me. April 8th. Have found much rest in him who bore all our burdens for us. April 26th. Tonight I venture to break the ice of unchristian silence. Why should not selfishness be buried beneath the Atlantic in matters so sacred? May 6th, Saturday evening. This was the evening precious to the communion, and in prospect of again declaring himself the Lord's. At his table, he enters into a brief review of his state. He had partaken of the ordinances in May of the year before for the first time, but he was then living at ease and saw not the solemn nature of the step he took. He now sits down and reviews the past. What a mass of corruption have I been! How great a portion of my life have I spent wholly without God in the world, given up to sense and the perishing things around me. Naturally, of a feeling and sentiment disposition, how much of my religion has been, and to this day is, tinged with these colors of earth, restrained from open vice by educational views and the fear of man, how much ungodliness has reigned within me. How often has it broken through all restraints and come out in the shape of lust and anger, mad ambition, and unhallowed words. Though my vice was always refined, yet how subtle and how awfully prevalent it was. How complete a test was the Sabbath, spent in weariness as much of it as was given to God's service. How I polluted it by my hypocrisies, my self-conceits, my worldly thoughts, and worldly friends. How formally and unheedingly the Bible was read. How little was read. So little that even now I have not read at all. How unboundedly was the wild impulse of the heart obeyed. How much more was the creature loved than the Creator. O great God, thou didst suffer me to live, whilst I so dishonored thee. Thou knowest the whole, and it was thy hand alone that could awaken me from the death in which I was and was contented to be. Gladly would I have escaped from the shepherd that sought me as I strayed. But he took me up in his arms and carried me back. And yet he took me not for anything that was in me. I was no more fit for his service than the Australian, and no more worthy to be called and chosen. Yet, why should I doubt? Not that God is unwilling, not that he is unable. Of both, I am assured. But perhaps my old sins are too fearful and my unbelief too glaring. Nay, I come to Christ, not although I am a sinner, but just because I am a sinner, even the chief, he then adds, and through sentiment and constitutional enthusiasm, may have a great effect on me. Still I believe that my soul is in sincerity, desirous and earnest about having all its concerns at rest with God and Christ, that his kingdom occupies the most part of all my thoughts, in even of my long polluted affections. Not unto me, not unto me. Be the shadow of praise of merit ascribed. But let all glory be given to thy most holy name. As surely as thou didst make the mouth with which I pray, so surely dost thou prompt every prayer of faith which I utter. Thou hast made me all that I am, and given me all that I have. Next day, after communicating, he writes, I well remember when I was an enemy, and especially abhorred this ordinance, as binding me down, as if I be brought to Christ in heart, I shall not dread any bands that can draw me close to him. Evening. Much peace. Look back, my soul, and view the mind that belongeth to thee, the 12 months ago. My soul, thy place is in the dust. May 19th. Thought with more comfort than usual of being a witness for Jesus in a foreign land. June 4th. Walking with A. Somerville by Crathleith, conversing on missions. If I am to go to the heathen to speak of the unsearchable riches of Christ, but one thing must be given me, to be out of the reach of then full influence of esteem or contempt. If worldly motives go with me, I shall never convert a soul and shall lose my own in the labor. June 22nd. Variety of studies. Septuagint translation of Exodus and Vulgate. Brought Edwards' works. Drawing. Truly, there was nothing in me that should have induced him to choose me. I was but as the other brands, upon whom the fire is already kindled, which shall burn forevermore. And as soon could the billet leap from the hearth and become a green tree, as my soul could have sprought to newness of life. June 25th. In reference to the office of the holy ministry, how apt are we to lose our hours in the vainest babblings, as do the world? How can this be with those chosen for the mighty office? Fellow workers with God, heralds of his Son, evangelists, men set apart to the work, chosen out of the chosen, as it were, the very pick of the flocks, who are to shine as the stars forever and ever? Alas, alas, my soul, where shalt thou appear? O Lord God, I am a little child, but thou wilt send an angel with a live coal from off the altar and touch my unclean lips and put a tongue within my dry mouth, so that I shall say with Isaiah, here am I, send me. Then after reading a little of Edwards' works, oh, that heart and understanding may grow together, like brother and sister, leaning on one another. June 27th. Life of David Brennan. Most wonderful man. What conflicts, what depressions, desertions, strength, advancement, victories within thy torn bosom. I cannot express what I think when I think of thee. Tonight, more set upon missionary enterprise than ever. June 28th. Oh, for Brennard's humility and self-loathing dispositions. June 30th. Much carelessness, sin, and sorrow. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of sin and death? Enter thou my soul into the rock and hide thee in the dust for fear of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. And then he writes a few verses, of which are some stanzas. I will arise and seek my God, and bow down beneath my load, lay all my sins before him. Then he shall wash my soul from sin, and put a new heart me within, and teach me to adore him. O ye that fain would find the joy, the only one that wants alloy, which never be is deceived, come to the well of life with me, and drink as it is proffered, free, the gospel draught receiving. I come to Christ because I know the very worst are called to go. And when in faith I find him, I'll walk in him and lean on him, because I cannot move a limb until he says, unbind him. July 3rd. This last bitter root of worldliness that has so often betrayed me has this night so grossly that I cannot but regard it as God's chosen way to make me loathe and forsake it forever. I would vow, but it is much more like a weakly worm to pray. Set in the dust, O my soul. I believe he was unable to keep his resolution. Once only, in the end of this year, was he again led back to gaiety, but it was the last time. July 7th, Saturday. After finishing my usual studies, tried to fast a little with much prayer and earnest seeking of God's face, remembering what occurred this night last year, alluding to his brother's death. July 22nd. Had this evening a more complete understanding of that self-emptying and abasement with which it is necessary to come to Christ, a denying of self, trampling it underfoot, a recognizing of the complete righteousness and justice of God that could do nothing else with us but condemn us utterly and thrust us down to lowest hell, a feeling that, even in hell, we should rejoice in his sovereignty and say that all was rightly done. August 15th. Little done, and as little suffered. Awfully important question. Am I redeeming the time? August 18th. Heard of the death of James Somerville. Footnote. Son of the minister of Dramalizer. Very promising and very ambitious. End of footnote. By fever, induced by cholera. O God, thy ways and thoughts are not as ours. He had preached his first sermon. I saw him last on Friday, 27th of July, at the college gate. Shook hands and little thought I was to see him no more on earth. September 2nd, Sabbath evening, reading. Too much engrossed and too little devotion. Preparation for fall. Warning. We may be too engrossed with the shell even of heavenly things. September 9th. Oh, for true, unfinished humility. I know I have cause to be humble, and yet I do not know one half of that cause. I know I am proud, and yet I do not know the half of that pride. September 30th. Somewhat straightened by loose Sabbath observances. Best ways to be explicit and manly. November 1st. More abundant longings for the work of the ministry. Oh, that Christ would but count me faithful, that a dispensation of the gospel might be committed to me. And then he adds, much peace. Peaceful, because believing. December 2nd. Hitherto he used to spend much of the Sabbath evening in extending his notes of Mr. Bruce's sermons, but now determined to be brief with these for the sake of more practical, meditative, resting, sabbatical evening. December the 11th. Mind quite unfit for devotion. Prayerless prayer. December 31st. God has in this past year introduced me to the preparation of the ministry. I bless him for that. He has helped me to give up much of my shame to name his name and be on his side, especially before particular friends. I bless him for that. He has taken conclusively away friends that might have been a snare, must have been a stumbling block. I bless him for that. He has introduced me to one Christian friend, concealed more and more my amity with another. I bless him for that. January 27th, 1883. On this day, I had been the custom of his brother David to write a Carmen Natal on their father's birthday. Robert took up the domestic song this year, and in doing so made some beautiful and tender allusions. Ah, where is the harp that was strung to thy praise, so oft and so sweetly in happier days? When the tears that we shed were tears of our joy, and the pleasure of home were unmixed with alloy. The harp is now mute, its last breathings are spoken, and the cord, though 'twas threefold, is now at last broken. Yet why should we murmur, short-sighted in vain, since death to that loved one was undying gain? Ah, fools, shall we grieve that he left this poor scene to dwell in the realms that are ever serene? Though he sparkled the gems in our circle of love, he is even more prized in the circles above. And though sweetly he sung of his father on earth, when this day would inspire him with tenderest mirth, yet a holier tone to his harp is now given, as he sings to his unborn father in heaven. February 3rd, writing to a medical friend of his brother, Williams, he says, I remember long ago a remark you once made to William, which has somehow or other stuck in my head. that medical men ought to make a distinct study of the Bible, purely for the sake of ministering conviction and consolation to their patients. I think you also said that you had actually begun with that view. Such a determination, though formed in youth, is one which I trust riper years will not make you blush to own. February the 11th. Somewhat overcome. Let me see. There is a creeping defect here. Humble, purpose-like reading of the word omitted. What plant can be unwatered and not withered? February 16th. Walked to Corstropine Hill. Many thoughts of the follies of my youth. How many, O Lord, may they be? Summed up in one, ungodliness. February 21st. Am as I willing as ever to preach to the lost heathen? March 8th. Biblical criticism. This must not supersede heart work, how apt it is. March 12th. Oh, for activity, activity, activity. March 29th. Today, my second session at the Divinity Hall ends. I am now in the middle of my career. God holds me on with a steady pace. March 31st. The bull tosses in the net. How should the Christian imitate the anxieties of the worldling? April 17th. He heard of the death of one whom many friends had esteemed much and lamented deeply. This led him to touch the strings of his harp again, in a measure somewhat irregular, yet sad and sweet. We do all fade as a leaf. She lived, so dying like and frail, that every bitter gale of winter seemed to blow, only to lay her low. She lived to show how he, who stills the stormy sea, can overrule the winter's power, and keep alive the tiniest flower, can bear the young lamb in his arms, and shelter it from the death's alarms. She died. When spring with brightest flowers was freshening all the borders, the lynx's song her choicest lay, when her sweet voice was hushed for array. The snowdrop rose above the ground, when she beneath her pillow found, both cold and white and fair. She, fairest of the fair, she died to teach us all, the loveliest must fall. A curse is written on the brow of beauty, and the lover's vow cannot retain the flinting breath, nor save from all-devouring death. She lives. The spirit left the earth, and he who gave her birth has called her to his dread abode to meet her Savior and God. She lives to tell how blessed, in the evening rest, of those who in the Lamb's blood saved, are chosen, sanctified, and saved. How fearful is their doom, who drop into the tomb, without a convert from the air, of him who is consuming fire. She shall live, the grace, the grave shall yield his prize, when from the rending skies, Christ shall with shouting angels come, to wake the slumberers of the tomb, and many more shall rise, before our longing eyes. Oh, may we all together meet, embracing the Redeemer's feet. May 20th, General Assembly. The motion regarding chapels of ease lost by 106 to 103. Every shock of the ram is heavier and stronger, till all shall give way. June 4th, evening almost lost. Music will not sanctify, though it makes feminine the heart. June 22nd, omissions made way for commissions. Could I take effective warning? A world's wealth would not make up for that saying. If any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father. But how shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? June 30th, self-examination. Why is the missionary life so often an object of my thoughts? It is simply for the love I bear to souls. Then why do I not show it more where I am? Souls are as precious here as in Burma. Does the romance of the business not weigh anything with me? The interest and esteem I would carry with me? The nice journals and letters I should write and receive? Why would I so much rather go to the East than the West Indies? Am I wholly deceiving my own heart? And have I not a spark of true missionary zeal? Lord, give me to understand and imitate the spirit of those unearthly words of thy dear Son. it is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Gloria in excelsis Deo. August 13th, clear conviction of sin is the only true origin of dependency on another's righteousness, and therefore, strange to say, of the Christian's peace of mind and cheerfulness. September 8th, reading Adam's private thoughts. Oh, for his heart-searching humility! Ah me, on what mountains of pride must I be wondering when all I do is tenuine with the very sins this man so deplores? Yet where are my wailings? Where are my tears over my love of praise? November 14th, composition, a pleasant kind of labor. I fear the love of applause or effect goes a great way. May God keep me from preaching myself instead of Christ crucified. January 15th, 1834. Heard of the death of J.S. off the Cape of Good Hope. O God, how thou breakest into families. Must not the disease be dangerous when the tender-hearted surgeon cuts deep into the flesh? How much more when God is the operator who afflicteth not from his heart, nor grieveth the children of men. Lamentations 3:33. February 23rd, Sabbath. Rose early to seek God and found him whom my soul loveth. Who would not rise early to meet such company? The rains are over and gone. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. February 22nd. He writes a letter to one who, he feared, was only sentimental and not really under a sense of sin. Is it possible, think you, for a person to be conceited in his own miseries? May there not be a deep leaven of pride in telling how desolate and how unfeeling we are, in brooding over our unearthly pains, in our being excluded from the unsympathetic world, in our being the invalids of Christ's hospital? He has himself been taught by the Spirit that it is more humbling for us to take what grace offers than to bewail our wants and worthlessness. 2 days after, he records with thankful astonishment that for the first time in his life he had been blessed to awaken a soul. All who find Christ for themselves are impelled by the holy necessity of constraining love to seek the salvation of others. Andrew findeth his brother Peter, and Philip findeth his friend Nathaniel. So was it in the case before us. He no sooner knew Christ's righteousness as his own covering than he longed to see others clothed in the same spotless robe. And it is peculiarly interesting to read the feelings of one who was yet to be blessed in plucking so many brands from the fire, when for the first time he saw the Lord graciously employing him in this most more than angelistic work. We have his own testimony, February 25th. After sermon, the precious tidings that a soul has been melted down by the grace of the Savior. How blessed, in answer to prayer, if it be really so, can these dry bones live? Lord, thou knowest. What a blessed thing it is to see the first grievings of the awakened spirit when it cries, I cannot see myself a sinner, I cannot pray, for my wild heart wonders. It has refreshed me more than 1,000 sermons. I know not how to thank and admire God sufficiently for this incipient work. Lord, perfect that which thou hast begun. A few days after, Lord, I thank thee that thou hast showed me this wondrous working, though I was but an adoring spectator rather than an instrument. It is scarcely less interesting in the case of one so gifted for the work of visiting the careless and so singularly skilled in ministering the word by the bedside of the dying to find a record of the occasion where the Lord led him forth to take his first survey of the field of labor. There existed at that time among some of the students attending the Divinity Hall a society, the sole object of which was to stir up each other to set apart an hour or two every week for visiting the careless and needy in the most neglected portions of the town. Our rule was not to subtract anything from our times of study, but to devote to this work an occasional hour in the intervals between different classes, or an hour that might otherwise have been given to recreation. All of us felt the work to be trying to the flesh at the outset, but none ever repented of persevering in it. one Saturday forenoon at the close of the usual prayer meeting, which met in Dr. Chambers' vestry. We went up together to a district in the Castle Hill. It was Robert's first near view of the hedonism of this his native city, and the effect was enduring. March 3rd, accompanied A.B. in one of his rounds through some of the most miserable habitations I ever beheld. Such scenes I never before dreamed of. Why am I such a stranger to the poor in my native town? I have passed their doors thousands of times. I have admired the huge black piles of buildings with their lofty chimneys breaking the sun's rays. Why have I not ventured within? How dwelleth the love of God in me? How cordial is the welcome, even of the poorest and most loathsome, to the voice of the Christian sympathy. What embedded masses of human beings are huddled together, unvisited by friend or minister. No man careth for our souls. Is written over every forehead, awake, my soul, why should I give hours and days any longer to the vain world, when there is such a world of misery at my very door? Lord, put thine own strength in me. Confirm every good resolution. Forgive my past long life of uselessness and folly. He forthwith became one of the society's most stable members, cultivating a district in the Canongate, teaching a Sabbath school and distributing the monthly visitor, along with Mr. Somerville. His experience there was fitted to give him insight into the sinner's depravity and all its forms. His first visit in his district is thus noticed. March 24th, visited two families with tolerable success. God grant a blessing may go with us. Began in fear and weakness and in much trembling. May the power be of God. Soon after, he narrates the following scene. Entered the house of. Heard her swearing as I came up the stairs. Found her storming at three little grandchildren, whom her daughter had left with her. She is a seared, hard-hearted wretch. Read Ezekiel 33. Interrupted by the entrance of her second daughter, furiously demanding her marriage lines. Became more discreet. Promised to come back, never came. Her father-in-law entered a hideous spectacle of an aged drunkard demanding money. Left the house with warnings. Another case he particularly mentions of a sick woman who, though careless before, suddenly seemed to float into a sea of joy without being able to give any scriptural account of the change. She continued, I believe, to her death in this state, but he feared it was a subtle delusion of Satan as an angel of light. One soul, however, was, to all appearance, brought truly to the Rock of Ages during his and his friend's prayerful visitations. These were first fruits. He continues his diary, though often considerable intervals occur in the registry of his spiritual state. May 9th, how gladly has God dwarfed me and every incident where I sought to enslave myself. I will learn at least to glory in disappointments. May 10th, at the communion, felt less use for the minister than ever. Let the master of the feast alone speak to my heart. He felt at such times, as many of the Lord's people have always done, that it is not the addresses of the ministers in serving the table, but the supper itself that ought to satisfy the soul within fatness. Leaving off on page 27, May 21st.